This is episode 47 of the Wildlife Photography Podcast. In today's episode, post-processing, filters, and being subtle. Hi everybody, my name is Jerry, I'm from WildEye, and it's been a hell of a Monday. It's majority of my day was spent loading new safaris to the back end of our website. Now, it doesn't sound as rough, but I haven't done it for a while, to be quite honest, because I've got some new guys and girls in the office who help with that. But this particular one too, actually, I needed to get out much sooner. So I had to go dig into the back end and get all the stuff online and double check it, then import the pictures and so on and so forth. And it struck me that majority of my last trips that I've been on, Svalbard, Gorillas and so on and so forth, have been booked either well in advance, so I haven't done it for a while, or the trips I've been doing has been private guided. So that is custom. So you book me with a trip. You book a trip with me and I then put the thing together based on our discussions. So I literally spent the entire day loading two new trips, both gorilla centric, if you will, onto the website. That details I will be releasing on my social media channel soon, but I'm pretty psyched for it. One is a gorilla and chimp, which includes Queen Elizabeth National Park. And the other one is just dedicated to gorillas. They're running back to back, so the options are quite nice. I'm very excited. But, okay, let me do this now then, so I don't have to do it at the end of the podcast. You can follow me on all the major social networks, yeah? I'm on Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. You'll find me on Jerry Fotovolt is the username everywhere. So if you want to stay up to date with the latest happenings from my trips, from my safaris, what's happening in the WildEye office and a whole lot more, that's probably the best place to be. Still favoring Instagram and Snapchat at this stage. Instagram, I'm finding, and maybe a discussion at some stage, but I'm finding it a bit messy these days, not just because of the content, there's some interesting content, but with they're trying to be everything. Suddenly there's stories, then there's the feed. Now you can do live videos, now you can do live videos, replays, then it's just on and on and on. So I know it's where the attention is, and I think it's a fantastic platform. You all should be on there as photographers. But yeah, it's feeling a bit messy. I am going back to Snapchat a bit. The interesting thing for me is Snapchat is still original, and I find the engagement on there is phenomenal. The type of discussions I'm having and questions and comments I'm having from people is a lot more real than the wow, amazing, hi sir, I would like to work for you stuff that I get on Instagram. So Snapchat for me is kind of more real life, day-to-day personal. I'll post more personal stuff on there, like the dogs and what I'm doing and stuff. So anyway, you'll find me on all those platforms. Hit me up if you have any questions or if you want to stay up to date with all of these new safaris that I'm talking about. But I'm digressing. The thought I had, I wanted to do this one earlier today, but it's just been a mess, is to do with post-processing. And I thought I'd link it with one of my notes that I wanted to do was specifically on the use of filters in post-processing for wildlife photography. Is it cheating or not? So my short answer, no, it's not. But we'll dig into that in a bit. But I want to discuss processing or post-processing filters and how to be subtle. Because I think for a lot of people, the downfall that they have, where they struggle with their images, I'm not sure if this is you guys, but is the actual processing of the image. The amount of times I get the question, and I'm talking on a daily basis here, of people asking, should they process my images? Or do I process my images? Or do I think that X, Y, and Z photographer processes their images? The answer to all of those is yes. You should be processing your images. You should be, and every single photographer who you think is amazing, they're processing their images. So yes, you should as well. Anyway, so let's get into it. Three kind of loosely related topics, we're going to mix them together: post-processing, the use of filters, and being subtle. Okay, let's start with this because it's a big thing, I think massive, huge thing that people still misunderstand. There is a huge difference between processing an image and manipulating an image. I've spoken about this in previous podcasts, but there are still a lot of you, a lot of people out there, and especially people who don't understand photography, who are not photographically literate, if you will, that think if you have photoshopped an image, you cheat because Photoshop is the devil and you've changed it. That is manipulating. For me, the moment you manipulate an image is the moment when you change the content from what it was when you clicked the shutter. Does that make sense? If I click the shutter and there's a zebra in the background and I go and clone him out, I've manipulated because that zebra was there when I took the image. Processing on the other side is what happens. There are three things. Number one, if you shoot a JPEG, yeah, your camera is still capturing it in RAW, but then there's JPEG compression and stuff that happens inside the camera or your phone, which is basically processing the RAW data into a file. Think of it, ingredients being turned into a cake, yeah? That's the process. And then it spits out a JPEG. So you shoot in RAW, I hope you do. If you don't, you need to. Because what you do then is when you fire up your Lightroom or your Photoshop or whatever processing software you're using, you are then taking all the ingredients from that RAW file and you're processing it into a JPEG, yeah? Global adjustments and localized adjustments inside of Lightroom does not affect the content of that frame. You are not adding elephants and extracting buffalo or deleting crocodiles from the image. Doesn't work like that. The moment you change the content, you have manipulated the frame. And for me, that is cheating. In wildlife photography, as far as I'm concerned, a lot of you are probably throwing your earphones all over the place because, oh no, I've been doing it forever. You can, it's your choice. But my thing is that as a wildlife photographer, my goal, and I would like to think everybody's goal as a wildlife photographer, is to document nature the way it is. And here's the catch, and I've said this in the past, whether we are there or not. So because you now arrive there and the wildebeest and the migration is lining up perfectly and one or two of them in the background would make a huge difference, you clone them in. That's cheating because you are not telling people the real story. That is manipulating an image, yeah? So processing is literally taking what you have in your image and making it better, polishing it. And again, it is not cheating to process an image. There are still people out there, and this blows my mind, that think it's cheating to process an image. We're going to talk about subtle in a little bit because that's where the wheels just come off properly. So processing is not wrong. So look back. For those of you that shot film, hands up. Okay, cool. For you guys, is in the old days, you would shoot film. Yeah, it was pretty cool. And you would shoot this film. And then once you're done, you would go down in South Africa to the CNA, you would hand your, what's it called, your film, the roll of 24 or 36 exposures to the strange little man behind the counter. He would say, come back in an hour if you're lucky, or the next day. And then you would go back and they would hand you this envelope that you would open up, and inside would be those brown strips of film that they've used to process the image, as well as then your JPEGs or your real photographs. See, the real photograph is something you can use. You could show to someone, you could put it in a book, or you could stick it up on the wall. In today's world, it's the same thing. You could show it to someone on your phone, you can stick it on your Facebook wall, or you can build a website from it. A JPEG, a RAW file can't do that. So processing is a part of the digital photographic process. Listen to what I said there. I didn't say post-processing, I said processing. Because, and for those of you that have been on safari with me, you'll hear me say this often in the field. If you understand what your processing program, whether you choose Lightroom, Photoshop, Luminar, whatever you choose, if you understand the capabilities of that program, you can start shooting for processing during difficult scenes. Yes, the mantra of do it right in camera still counts, and you need to be shit hot and understand every single technical variable and how to change it in camera. You need to understand how to expose, how to protect your blacks and whites in the histogram, something I've been big on my last couple of trips with my guests, is the histogram and protecting those highlights and the shadows. But where was I? I'm lost here. I have a sip of whiskey and then carry on. Shooting for processing. So if you then shoot for your processing in the field, if you are faced with a very difficult lighting situation, a leopard, or I'm going to go to chimpanzees because it's a blog podcast I'm working on, is if you try to photograph black chimpanzees up against a forest canopy where you've got very bright sky from the back, your camera will not capture that the way you see it. I guarantee you this. So you have to then shoot for processing. You have to decide, do I want to protect the blacks and blow the highlights? Do I want to do the other way around? And then go from there, because you know what you can pull back and what you can save in Lightroom. Yeah. Now, just while I'm there, remember, you cannot polish a turd. Yeah. You cannot, if you put shit into Lightroom, you're going to get shit out. It's as simple as that. So you still need to get good quality RAW files. And that's where the technical understanding of photography comes in. But once you know what your processing program is capable of, and you keep it in mind during your photography phase of this whole journey that we're doing, you're going to be so much more comfortable, not only in the field, but also with your processing. So post-processing, I feel, is wrong. Too many people, too many books, too many blogs, too many websites still speak about post-processing. Yes, it is a process that happens after the fact, but I believe, and I truly, truly believe this, if you're in the field with me this year or in the last 6 months, I've been hammering it big time, is you need to think of it as a part of the whole digital photography process. You cannot disconnect what you do in the field from your processing. You're gonna have to process your file. Even if you just pump 5 on the clarity, 4 on saturation, and a little bit of contrast, you have processed your file. So I prefer to think of it as processing. The whole process, there's a lot of processing in there. There's a lot of, the process starts from the moment you pick up your camera, you have a reason for taking a shot. Yeah, that's number one. Number two is you use all your technical understanding and your creative eye, if you will, to create a raw file. And then the process continues as you take that raw file into Lightroom, Photoshop, whatever it is, and process it to your final version. So we cannot disconnect processing in Lightroom, Photoshop from the process. It is just a part of it, whether you like it or not. So it is a strange thing to me that so many people still ask, should they process their images? Yes. Yes, you should. Yes, you should just learn Lightroom. Yes, you should learn a bit of Photoshop. And yes, you should process your images. You definitely have to. I do, and everybody else whose images are out there who you think is amazing. Wow, it is so sharp. It is so colorful. The saturation is great. The contrast is awesome. It's been processed. And it's not a bad thing. It's a thing that has to happen. So with all of that said, now enters filters. So I'm gonna quickly just open up my Photoshop here. Look under filters. I have a collection of filters installed that I sometimes use out of Lightroom and or Photoshop because I'm not stuck to one program anymore. The romance of do you use Lightroom or Photoshop is such a mundane argument. People are still stuck with, I'm not gonna use Photoshop because that's cheating and Lightroom's better, whatever. Nobody's gonna stand in front of your image or look at your image online and think, geez, George, did you use Photoshop or Lightroom? Because this is amazing. It doesn't make a difference. It's the same thing. It doesn't matter what kind of camera you use. It's the end product that counts. So I had a discussion. Okay, now I'm getting to the point. I had a discussion with a client on, I think it might actually have been in Svalbard, where we were processing some of his images, helping him to kind of get the most out of it. And we were jumping from Lightroom into Nik filters, then to Photoshop, then into McFun's tonality, then back to Photoshop, then into Alien Skin's exposure, and then back, and then save the final image, and it was great. Okay, so the question came up is using a filter on your wildlife images cheating? I say no. Now, I know there's a lot of you that might have different opinions on this, and I would love to hear them. However, I think that every single thing you can do in a filter, you should be able to do either in Lightroom and or Photoshop. So if your skills on those two programs are sufficient, anything you do in a filter, you should be able to do natively. Does that make sense? So I don't think a filter is this magical, make this image great button that you can just click and it makes it work. You can use filters and still create pretty damn horrible images. It still has to do with keeping it natural. Think about what a filter does. A filter just applies a set of, it's almost like a recipe, and yes, I am against recipe driven, but it's like a little recipe for, if I'm gonna, for example, choose Glamour Glow, yeah? It's gonna push the saturation a bit, make it a bit warmer, and drop the clarity. That is what the filter does. Can I do it in Lightroom? Yes, I can. But with these products available, am I not saving time in actually using them? Because there are some pretty cool results you can get. It is still processing. You are still not changing. Okay, let's just park black and white monochrome for now because there is an argument there for manipulation and I'll get there now. But for majority of filters that you're using, Pro Contrast, for example, sings. I love Pro Contrast, which is one of the filters inside Nik Collection's Color Effects. Brilliant, brilliant to give your images that extra pop. I use it on almost every single image. Subtle, which I'll get to, but it's there. So filters do not change the content of the frame. You are processing the image, you are not changing the content. So in my mind, I've got no problem with filters and I'm using them more and more. Now, I've mentioned a couple there, but let me just run you through what I have installed on my laptop at this stage, which is my main travel computer. I've got the Nik Collection, which is a collection of 8 different filters. They're great. The two main ones, the headline, actually three headline filters for me there, ColorFX Pro 4, SilverFX Pro 2, and Vivesa 2 are phenomenal. Up until now, SilverFX, and I think it's still fighting for that top spot, is probably one of the best black and white conversion filters out there. It is phenomenal. ColorFX has about 50 or so filters in it, which, Pro Contrast being one of my favorites, you definitely need to check out. The only sad thing is, okay, I think I might have mentioned in the previous version, but Google owns Nick filters, yeah? They bought it from Nick way back, and they bought it just to get to the back-end technology of whatever it was they were looking for. They've just released, I think in the last month, just before I went to Svalbard, they released that they will not be updating these filters anymore, and what basically means it's going to die a slow death. So it is still relevant now, and I would still recommend, it's a free download, so you need to play with it. Go and check it out, Nick Filters. I think it's google.com/Nick, N-I-K collection. Definitely worth a look. But some of the new ones now. So because this is dying a slow death, I'm kind of preempting it. I'm jumping ahead and making sure that if and when these things become null and void, I want to have the next set or then be ready for the next set. So two of the programs or the new filters that I'm using, one is Luminar from a company called MacFun, M-A-C-P-H-U-N software, Luminar. It's either a standalone, very Lightroom-esque in its kind of look and feel, but it's also a plugin that you can use out of Lightroom and out of Photoshop. For those of you that don't know, what that means is I can start editing an image inside of Lightroom or Photoshop, go as far as I want. I can then jump into a filter such as Luminar, do what I want to do, save that file, and a new TIFF file gets created inside my Lightroom catalog next to the original. And I can then carry on working in that program, which is phenomenal. In Photoshop, what happens, it creates a new layer, and that layer then has all the filter adjustments, which you can then blend in, which is also pretty cool. So MacFun's Luminar is a pretty easy, I've specifically been playing this with this for presentations and stuff I'm working on. I need to stay ahead of the curve because I'm lecturing. I need to know what's happening. Luminar, very cool. Now, another one from the MacFun Creative Kit is Tonality. So again, MacFun, M-A-C-P-H-U-N Creative Kit, Tonality CK. It is a very, and I've been using this only for the last while, a very good black and white monochrome conversion filter. So you would do your raw processing inside of Lightroom or Photoshop. You would then punch that image into Tonality. It's very, very similar to both Lightroom and to Nick Filters in its workflow, as well as its UI, UX. It's very similar. And you can create from templates that they have, you can create your own. And you can start with a template and go from there. It is very, very, very much worth a look. So MacFun's Tonality for black and white conversions, go and check it out. It is really nice. The one thing I just want to jump in here with all of these filters, all of them come with some sort of presets or recipes. Now, if you've been following me for a while, first of all, thank you so much. I appreciate it. You'll know I don't like recipes. I think if we all go recipe-driven, all our images are going to look the same. So I'm not a fan of recipes. But if you are confused from a creative point of view as to where to start when you go and process, whether it's black and white or otherwise, these recipes are a very good starting point to get stuck in. So choose a recipe and then go and play with it. Make it your own. And the nice thing is, if you find the look and feel that you like, you can literally just save that as a new recipe, heaven forbid, and then work from there. But if you're looking, for example, for a certain style, or you want to create a portfolio of black and white images with all the same color and tone, or a website gallery with all the same color and tone, this is a great way to do it. Start from a recipe or what are they called? Some of them call them presets. Sorry, I know this. Presets, and then go from there. A lot of questions also revolve around how do I start processing? I'm not sure where to go. I believe if you have a vision for your image and you start with the right thing in mind, as in I want to get it back to what it looked like when I was there, it's easier. But I understand for some people, creativity, we all have it. We just have to kind of play with it. It's a nice way to start. Start with a filter and then work from there, and you'll pick up ideas as you go. Right, so those for me are ones that I've used on almost every single image, whether black and white or otherwise. So it's Nick Filters, and then MacFun's Tonality and Luminar. Another one which I downloaded actually the moment we got off the boat in Svalbard, I downloaded Alien Skin's Exposure X2. Now, this is another one that's very interesting to me because you can download a 30-day free trial. My trial, I think, ends in about 4 days. And yes, I'm going to purchase this thing because it is very, very powerful, very Lightroom-esque. Again, they've kind of created the baseline for UI, UX for these kind of programs. It's got the same, some of the shortcuts are even the same. And you can use this as a standalone raw processor, like Lightroom, but what's cool here is they have a whole bunch of presets which is based on old film camera looks and feels. So under color, for example, you get bokeh, bright, cinema, colored films, aged, color films, Polaroid. Under black and white, let me just minimize these, you got black and white films, low contrast, Polaroid, vintage, focus, and there are a lot. So again, if you start with these as a baseline and start working from there, you're giving yourself a very nice opportunity, not just to learn, but to create a different type of image. For those of you on Instagram that are following me, at Jerry van der Walt, the Wildebeest Crossing image I posted earlier today, was done with one of these film presets. I'm going to just read this to you because I did find it interesting. I, for example, chose, saturated glow for that migration image. So if I hover over saturated glows, the computer says, inspired by Kodak X-Star 100, this preset shows a softer side while retaining punchy colors, a touch of IR glow brightness, and softens the highlights. Now, every one of those things, apart from making it specifically a film, I can go and do. I can play with clarity and dehaze and contrast and mimic this. But my goodness, a single click and then a bit of a tweak gives me the answer. It's not cheating. It is not cheating because that wildebeest image that I posted of the river crossing is exactly what I saw when I was there. But it gives me, this is my link to subtle, it's a very subtle thing, the use of these filters, in order to get the most out of an image and make it visible, make it punchy, make it real. It's don't diss filters, guys. I would love to hear, if any of you are very against filters and you think it's the devil, let me know, but more importantly, let me know why. I would love to have either a follow-up blog or even a Skype blog interview with you to discuss this, because I really think a lot of people are leaving because of their misunderstanding or their lack of understanding, rather, of what their programming, what their software programs can do, their processing software, that they're leaving a lot of very good image quality on the table. You are not getting the most from your files because you are working to old stereotypes of, oh no, I've got to use only Photoshop or Lightroom and filters are bad and only the new age. It's crap. Use filters, but use them subtle and make sure to tweak them for what you want to get. That end vision is still very important. Okay, subtle. Okay, the link I was hoping for didn't go as subtle as what I'm hoping for. But what subtle is to me, and this is something that struck me today, I was busy posting a couple of images on Instagram and I followed, by chance, one of the hashtags, which happened to be wildlife photography, because I was clicking through and I just flicked through once or twice through the feed. As you guys know, I hope, on Instagram, if you click on a hashtag, the top 9 that you see are the most popular ones at the moment with the most reach, yeah? And then underneath it goes chronological. From the top 9 is the most favorite ones. Underneath that, it goes as they get posted. So I scrolled through and it is unbelievable to me how people don't understand subtlety when it comes to processing. Now, it might be that you are doing it on a screen that's not calibrated. So that's cool. Get your screen calibrated then. But the amount of, and there's both here, there's over-processing and under-processing. And to me, I think over-processing is almost worse. If you look at a leopard and this thing is glowing, it looks like it swallowed a bar of plutonium because its eyes are radiating brighter than the sun, and it looks like this thing has been naturally saturated to plus 100 on all the sliders. It's not natural. And anybody, and I'm not even talking just about photographers, anybody can look at that thing and think, my goodness, that is overprocessed. Now, before I carry on, one of the things that really grates me on Instagram is when you get these images, and it's mostly aggregator sites that share this shit, is when you have an image that's obviously photoshopped. It is obviously put together a composite of many different things, and it is so oversaturated, and they've got like 14,000 probably paid likes and comments saying, this is amazing, oh my God, nature is incredible, blah, blah, blah. That's sad. So I'm going to let that go for now. I can rant about that another time. But I'm just scrolling through Instagram while I'm talking to you guys on the wildlife photography feed. And I think, and subtlety to me comes in where you shouldn't be able to see what someone has done. I mean, the definition of subtle is so delicate or precise as to be difficult to analyze or describe. And that's exactly, I think, the point a lot of people are missing is they don't go subtle. If I can look at your image and say, oh, okay, Jimmy, I can see you've put a brush on these leopards' eyes because they all look like they've swallowed some nuclear material. I can see you put a radial filter around his head because it looks like he's wearing a halo. I can see you push your black and whites because the contrast just... The moment you can see what someone's done to an image, I think it's overdone. I think it's overcooked. It doesn't even have to be those super bright colors that's oversaturated. It's just that. If someone can look at your image and say, yo, I think you've overprocessed this because the colors are just a little bit unnatural, I think you've gone too far. And is there a space for that? Yes, absolutely. If you want to create digital art, then so be it, but then be honest about it. You're not creating wildlife images. The sky was not that blue when you photographed that elephant, for example. And more often than not, it's visible. You can see it. So that's one thing. I mean, keep in mind, look at your image before you post it on your website for print, whatever, and just look and see, can I, and I've done it, see what I've done? And you would look at it through a very, through a much more critical eye because you know what you've done. If you've brushed the subject, and you can scan the outside edges and you see where you spilled over the edge, then change it. If you can see it, other people can see it as well. So make sure your overprocessing is to the point where at least nobody can see it. Then you win. Now, I'm gonna leave you with a nice little idea here. It's something I've been doing the last while as well on workshop and with private clients is when you start processing an image in Lightroom specifically, but it works for Adobe Camera Raw in Photoshop as well because it's literally the same thing. Same sliders, same shortcuts, everything, is when you start processing, for example, clarity and saturation, we all start from the zero point. So the slider's in the middle, yeah? So you're looking at the screen, you grab the slider, and you slowly move your mouse to the right to up clarity or saturation, and then you slowly go up, and then you stop, because I think that's enough. What about, and trust me, go and give this a bash, and let me know what you think. Take that slider, for example, clarity on wildlife images, swing it all the way to the right. Immediately it will look dog shit horrible, but here's the catch. You now reverse it slowly until you get to a point where it's actually usable and likable. Because if you try this, and I've done it a couple of times now with different people on different images and it works every single time. If you go from zero and you slowly move your slider up, yeah, I think there's a 95% chance you're gonna leave image quality on the table. You're not gonna go far enough because you're scared because Jerry said in a podcast that you shouldn't overprocess. However, if you swing that slider all the way to the right and then work on a deductive fashion and kind of bring it back from 100 towards zero, if you create a virtual copy and you put them side by side, one going from zero up and one going from 100 down, more often than not, the better image, the more striking, punchy, natural image will be the one where you went all the way and then brought it back. Because it's easy to see if something's horrible and I want to take that horrible away until I get to the point where it's enough. It's well saturated or well clarity slided by now. Whereas if you go from zero, you never know if you're leaving some of that clarity on the tap where it's just not enough. So give it a bash when you process next time, guys. I promise you, I'm doing the same with my images every single time. I have a very specific workflow and it works for me, but I've tried it with clients in Svalbard, with gorillas, in Timbavati with leopards, is you're not leaving saturation, which could have made the image just that 2% better, subtle, remember, on the table, and you're making sure you're getting the best out of your raw file. It works. So seriously, give it a try, and then send me an email, go onto my website, send me a form, hit me up on Instagram, tag me in the image where you tried it. I would love to hear what you think, because I know a lot of people struggle with processing. It's not the most asked question that I get, but it's one of those up there where people always ask, I'm not sure what to do, is this fine, please check my work, whatever, whatever, is the moment you start understanding where you're going with it, and most importantly, understanding what your program is capable of, yeah, then you're gonna start winning. So if you haven't got my workflow document from episode, whatever, I think 16, 17 somewhere, email me, jerry@wildeye, wild with a hyphen eye.co.za, and ask me for the PDF document. Work through that, yeah? This is just how to import, then to check, then to, and so on and so forth. But then try this technique of maxing out the slider and dropping it down until it works. Tag me on Instagram once you've tried it. I would love to see, because I really, really think it'll make a difference. I know it has for people who I've worked with. So definitely something to give a try. Okay, wow, we're approaching half an hour here. This is a lot more than I was initially planning. It was just going to be a couple of random thoughts based on the back of the filter discussion. But hey, I hope there's some value in it for you guys. That's why I do this. I love sharing on this platform like I do in the field, because I know a lot of you, for example, haven't been on a safari. You can't get to Africa to kind of attend our workshops and stuff. So this is a great way for me to reach you guys and hopefully help you along on your journey. Just today, someone said thank you on Snapchat for the content and the tutorials. And guys, it means the world to me. So if I've had any value or if I've added any value to you guys, let me know. It's just great to hear that you guys are winning and your photography is getting better. All right, so I'm going to say goodbye now. And I'll be back in the next episode, more than likely a discussion around should you always travel with the same photographic safari guide? Because I have thoughts, yeah? It's either that one, or I'm going to look at the talk through the chimpanzee experience in Kibali, where I did this a couple of episodes ago of talking you through what it's like to go on a gorilla safari. I'm going to do the same for the chimpanzees, and also, hopefully later this week, otherwise next week, also one where I'm going to talk you through a day of the Great Migration, because that's after my quick safari this weekend. That's the next one I have. 2 weeks of Great Migration safaris. And yes, I will be podcasting from there. That should be pretty fun. All right, guys, thank you as always for your time. Hit me up on social. I'd love to hear from you. And I always appreciate you listening and following along. I will chat to you guys in the next episode. My name is Jerry. I'm from Wild Eye. Have a good one.